if we were to stand in one, in a conference, and have a portfolio committee from India speaking on the Grameen Bank and how the Grameen Bank changed the condition of poor people who could not have access to finance in India, how the Grameen Bank was able to change that. And who owns the Grameen Bank today? 90% of the Grameen Bank is owned by borrowers. And 10% of the Grameen Bank is owned by government. In South Africa, we have a SEPA that has got a responsibility of developing SMEs and cooperatives. But the people who are selling on the street can't access that service. Because SEPA is sitting in Ivory Tower's offices and it is working through intermediaries. And even its funding criteria doesn't speak to the condition of the people it's supposed to service. And we then have the responsibility of changing that situation. So I don't want to take long in this. Plastic South Africa is here to speak for itself, and we have also, I have done, asked that the Buy American Act, which is completed, as well as the Buy Brazilian Act, which is completed, so that we can see for ourselves that when a government is decisive, changes simply. And as a portfolio committee, we need to be decisive and represent the people that have elected us. And if there are programs put by the department that are denied to do things, we have stopped those programs. Because we don't get voted by officials in the department, no matter how they think, we get voted by the community. And it is our responsibility to represent the interests of those communities. Any official who differs with us, we have the budget review recommendation process that we can use to change that thinking. And we are not going to waste time and say we are going to nerf the situation. We're not going to nerf the situation. We only have 5 years, and in the first year, we must lay down a ground of how we want to change the plight of the people who sell on the street, rainy days, winter, to create an income. And it is not a good thing. The slide that was presented to us by the Institute of Race Relations, which shows an increasing number of people who depend on social grants. And then we increase the age 18. And after 18, if the 18 years, if there is nothing that has been done, that will take that person who comes from that poor family, that survives on social grant and free services. What will become of that person when he or she is beyond 18? A whore or a criminal? And if it's a woman, a prostitute? That is what we need to look at. What are the things that we can do in this 5 years to change the playing field? And we have that power as a portfolio commission. I thought that it's important for us to just with that note. Having said that, I would then go to item number 2, the apology. Are there any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, the official. I received an apology for Honorable Minister Mindiwesu Zulu, who is held in the cabinet meeting. And then I also have the apology of the acting Director General for the Department, Ms. Mapai, who is attending the 7th MMU conference and the exhibition in England and ICC. And I also have the apology of Honorable Kwan. So those are the apologies that I have.
Honorable
Kwan?
Yes.
I'm saying not an apology, but the DA got a meeting at 1:30. So if we can, 1 o'clock, sorry, 1 o'clock. So if you can leave after 12:30, it would be appreciated.
Yes, good morning, sir. Yes, Saturday, apology by the minister.
Thank you. We will try to finish by thank you. Can we then go to minutes? Our agenda it appears that we will be dealing with a process of minutes. The committee secretary has just informed me that we will actually be dealing with two sets of minutes. The minutes of the meeting held on the 22nd of October and the one that was held on the 6th of October. Can we? 6th November. Thank you. Can we then go to the minutes of the 22nd of October? Well, on page 1. Page 2. Page 3.
Yes, sir.
Honorable Sam.
Thank you, sir. Page 3. Second paragraph. Third line. Should read, especially on presentations delivered by the SA Institute of Race Relations, which is the proper name, not International Institute, International Mission. So the SA Institute of Race Relations, SAIRR. And then in the same paragraph, the third line from the bottom, second last word should be inserted, the he is the governed person. Oh, hang on a second. I've got an earlier version of these minutes. They've obviously been changed. Have these minutes been changed as they were originally? Secretary? Secretary is going to ask you a question. Have these minutes been updated since the original copies were sent up? Because they're different from the ones that I've got.
Yes, it has been edited.
Has it been edited? Yes, okay. All right, sorry, I guess I'm going to have to look at this copy. But anyway, my first point remains, the essay. I'll have to read the printed version.
Page 4. If the minister, a full reflection of the proceedings of the meeting,
Sorry, sir.
Can I just go back to page 4, under deliberation? Point 4, deliberation. I'd like to suggest some changes, but I don't think what was written is completely correct. I'd like to amend it as follows. On deliberations, members of the committee questioned elements of both the strategic and annual performance plans, in particular the amounts allocated to remuneration of employees in goods and services. It's not correct to say that the committee accepted the report. It is because we eventually did, but I think it's important to say that we raised objections to certain elements of the report, which need to be noted.
Can you paraphrase by saying that before accepting the question, because we did accept.
Yes, we did, but we did also
question.
Correct.
And in our report, it does appear that in fact we will reconsider that because we would want to see the organogram that speaks to the mandate. And even in our declaration yesterday, that is what we said.
That's correct. I'm happy with that. And then on page 4. Third line from the bottom. I think it's important to say that the committee recommended that the department should conduct, rather than the department should conduct. Because that was a specific recommendation from the committee. You see? Third line from the bottom, page 4.
Can you repeat
that? Yeah, it says at the moment the department should conduct the scientific research. I think it should be, the committee recommended that to the department. Because it was our recommendation, not just the committee, not the department. Accepted from its own heart, so to speak.
That is correct. It was our recommendation.
Okay, and then...
Which would mean that at a particular point they will have to come back to us.
Correct.
And report on that.
Exactly.
We put it as one of the milestones for our monitoring.
Right, and then
that is for sure.
Then also on page 5, that third paragraph, which at the moment reads, in response to the department stated, I believe this should be amended as follows. In response, the department stated that it had signed an MOU with the DCI, I'll read it fully and then I'll slow down, regarding the migration of functions, and that deliberations are ongoing as which functions will remain with the DCI. Okay, can I repeat that?
Yes.
In response, the department stated it had signed an MOU with the DPI regarding the migration of functions and that deliberations are ongoing as to which functions will remain with the DPI. And I think that is also important because of the fact that we put into the BRRR a recommendation that all functions related to full business should be migrated from the DCI, and they currently have not been.
Yes,
that's
what I said.
Okay. Are you happy with that change?
And that is also what we said in our declaration yesterday.
Correct.
Also in our report.
Okay, and then last paragraph of section 3. I think you should read as follows. The department further explained that the strategy for intervention in the informal sector will include township economists, not economics, township economists. And then township economists, I think, should be replaced. We could discuss the meaning of this. Should interventions include the development of entrepreneurs? I think that's essentially what the paragraph is trying to say. You got that?
Yes, that is what's correct.
Okay. And then, sorry, one more point.
I think also on closing remarks. The sentence on line 5 to the bottom. Jesus has stated that functions that should migrate from his eyes should be those that address the needs of entrepreneurs. That is not correct. The needs of SMM is in cooperatives, because even if a big business isn't in a problem. That is a full reflection of what took place on that day. Can we have a more value for conduct of the advocate? Honorable Kruger?
Yes, ma'am. See, I move with the corrections that this is a full reflection of the meeting on the 2nd of with the corrections. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we have a second?
A second.
Honorable. Thank you. The minute of the portfolio committee. Once more, this is the development of the meeting that took place on the 22nd of October. I hereby accept. Shall we go to the meeting of the 5th of November? We're on page 1. Honorable Kruger. Honorable.
Can we just have a few minutes to read through this? On the request in the committee.
I'm the beautiful one, he's the ugly one, so
see.
Me too. Sorry,
how many minutes are required?
That's 3 minutes per page. 2 minutes per page.
I'll give it Pandela.
Okay.
5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
7 years old. Understand that?
Page 4, on the last paragraph, I think it's important to state that Eskom indicated there was a budget of 4.3 billion rand. What? It's not. There was a budget allocated to this project of 4.3 billion rand for 1 million solar heaters to be installed. Now, just as an aside, after the meeting, I did some calculations as to the results or the impact of this buy local campaign, the fact that the 70% local content regulations implemented by the DGI resulted in these items mainly being built locally. Now, he pointed out that the cost of a local solar water heater was 6,000 rand, roughly, and the cost of an imported one was 2,500 rand, which is a difference of 3,500 rand. Now, if you make the assumption that all these units are going to be imported, which isn't quite correct, but let's say most of them are imported, that means that we're talking about 3.5 billion rand extra money being spent because we're not importing them, we're buying locally. And that's the creation of 100 jobs in manufacturing. That means that each job is going to cost us 35 million rand. That's the impact of local procurement. Now, I just want to raise this point, Chair, because I think that we need to ask Eskom to come back to this committee, not necessarily to actually here, but we need to ask, to send them a written question, to ask them to give us the details of these things.
And I'll stop you. Are we dealing with letters arising or the record of what was discussed?
No.
What you are saying to me, you start by saying, in the meeting it was presented that there is 4.3 billion and 100 solar installations. That is what was said in the meeting. But then you go on to say, after the meeting, you did some calculation.
Yeah.
Now, the minute you say that, the point then that you are raising is a matter arising. It's not correction and what was discussed in the meeting. It is a follow-up that we would want us to make on a matter that was discussed in the meeting, which is a matter arising. And then we are proposing that we call it come back because it is a matter arising.
So it
can't be put in the minutes.
Fine.
It's something that was discussed for that day.
No problem.
Okay.
So can you refer to that? Because at the meeting it was presented that the budget was 4.3 billion rand for 1 million solar
heaters. Yes, that was said.
Thank you.
But then if you want to raise that issue as a letter arising that needs to make a follow-up on, raise your hand after you have adopted the minute and then say there is a matter arising and I would want to propose. Can we make that amendment and then move to page 5? Madam Chair?
Thank you, Chair. I think that we should insert the paragraph in section 3.4. The important point that the CEO of the SABS made, which was that local content would include the development of intellectual property. It should be added as a sentence after the first paragraph. Yes. The last point, and if you recall, in the questions that I put to the CEO, I made the point that she reiterated this point, that she said that it's very important that South Africa must develop its own intellectual property. and more money needs to be spent, more emphasis needs to be made on research and development, generally speaking. Agree?
Yes, I think
that's the same. Okay. I think it's important for the minutes to record that. And then one other change on page five, second and last paragraph. Further, the committee looks for more clarity on the lifestyle cost. That word should be life cycle, not lifestyle. Got it? Thank you, Chair.
On page 5, Comrade Chair, I just want us to think together. I don't necessarily have a proposal, but in the second paragraph, when we say the deadline, the SADS SMME partnership, I just want us to be sure that, you know, if we say that what we mean is the right, it just looks a bit strange to me. And then another one is the on paragraph 1 under number 4, the one but last sentence of that paragraph. Also to be sure of that word, in order to expatiate on the actual priorities, the word expatiate, I will propose if we can substitute with a more simpler word, we will do better.
I want to comment on the first point that you raised. Yes, the SIPS has got an SMME department. They presented us and we even said that it should include cooperative. Then I would want to be guided on the second one. Where
Chair, perhaps the drafters of this of these minutes could explain what they intended to mean, and then we can comment on what the word should be.
I think the view in the meeting was that Elcom's role needed more clarity in that because there was an issue about what the basic role of Elcom is. And I remember the point was raised by Honourable Chan to say Elcom needs to provide low-cost electricity, and there's also a bit of development that they should also deliver on as part of their role. So I think the word was then derived from those discussions to say that there needs to be more description on the actual priorities that ESCOM must deliver on.
Justin, how would it rate if we replace that word with expedite?
I don't think that's the meaning, if I may say, Chair. Actually, there's nothing wrong with this word in terms of meaning. The word is correct. It's just it's rather an obscure word. And what she was referring to in the minutes is the question I put to Eskom as to whether its mandate was to produce low-cost electricity or to help people boil water. That's the question. So maybe we could replace that word with clarify. Clarify or expand on its actual priorities, whichever you choose.
To expand on
the actual priorities.
Which comes back to the matters arising, which we take up in a minute.
Yeah. That is what was said in the meeting. Can we then go to page 6?
On page 6, the chair, because these meanings are not necessarily for ourselves. On bullet 2 under resolutions, I propose that we say namely, comma after the government, and then namely, and then we hit the challenges, you know, the triple challenges. And on the third bullet, where it says the commission will assist the department and entities we presented to gain a better understanding of properties so as to clear the differentiation between them and SMEs. I think we should improve that. It's either we say so as to indicate the difference between them and SMEs, or to illustrate, but I suggest we remove it, we replace that with the differentiation step, which.
Thank you. I would also suggest that on resolution we don't put bullet points, because when one refers to a resolution in future, you would refer to resolution number 4 and 4 of the particular meeting. A resolution is never put on a point board, because a resolution is something that needs with a bad structure for a long time. So it has to be numbered. And we're not only referring to this, we're referring to all the resolutions that we take. They should be numbered. So that when you refer to them in the future, you refer to a resolution number 44 of a meeting that says on a particular thing.
Seven. The committee was that the department that they invited to the meeting in the meeting.
We can just make a correction, because I don't think that Shishom could. You can make it, because it's our name.
Our proposition. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think in the past I have suggested that we should think carefully whether when we refer, because we're department and department, those are words that we're going to use very frequently. So we should just make up our minds whether it fits better with a capital G or whether a small g. I had in the past proposed a capital G.
Just clarifying that change, with which note Honorable Morris's proposal before, but the reason why some departments will be having a capital D on the minute, it depends on which department we're referring to. In that, if we're referring to a department, a presentation by a certain department that was in the meeting that time, then that department will have a capital D, because we're saying that department said this, that, the other. And then when we're referring to all the other departments or an issue that was said about all the other departments, then that will have a lower capital D. Thanks.
It's a correct
grammar.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we then have the mover and the seconder? With amendment, Honorable Novak.
I move for the chairman's amendment.
I second the amendment.
Thank you very much. Can we then move to the delegation?
Right, Chair. Can I just, for the record, come back to my minutes, matters arising? Yes, just to recap quickly. If you do the sums, the total number of solar units is 1 million, of which they've installed about 400,000, leaving about 600,000. The cost of an imported solar heater is 2,500 rand. The cost of a locally made one is 6,000 rand, but just between 3,500 rand. Because of the local content regulations from DPI, Eskom has to procure mostly locally manufactured geysers, solar geysers, which means that somewhere between 2,500 rand and 6,000 rand is going to be spent on each geyser. And that's the figure that we need to know. Because of the enormous cost that buying locally actually will result in, only for the creation of 100 jobs. So remember what he said, that those 100 jobs are dependent upon Eskom. Nobody else is going to buy those geysers. So, you know, then comes back to the question of, is it localization at any cost? Well, what is that cost? And I think that that's the question that the committee should be submitting to Eskom, to give us a proper breakdown of the actual proportion of solar heaters and components purchased locally versus those imported, so that we can actually understand what the cost of that creation has been. The point being that could that money have been better spent? Could have been spent in a way to create more than just 100 local manufacturing jobs. You know, could the Department of Small Business Development have used that money to set up an enterprise development fund to create more than just 100 jobs? This is the point that we were, you know,
can we raise the issue as an issue that we will need to follow up as a matter arising, so that we put it on the agenda for our next meeting and then engage on that issue from different perspectives? Because from where I sit, if 100 jobs were created in Senga, in one of the 5 wards that are the poorest wards in KwaZulu-Natal, and each job reduces government expenditure in its household on social grants, free house, free electricity, free water, free school uniform, and in that spending there are 10 people that are dependent on this one particular person that has been employed. I would not calculate that as 100 jobs. I would calculate that as a number of people that would be taken off poverty side. And also I would calculate that as a reduction in terms of dependency of poor families on government. So from where I sit, it would be cheaper for me. It depends where you sit. If you come from the first world part of South Africa, it's not cheap. If you come from the third world part of South Africa, it's better to spend that money, because you are not looking at the money that is spent by one department. You are looking at government expenditure in totality. And also you are looking at building a developmental state with active citizens in their own development, as opposed to building a state where people are passive recipients of services that are provided by government, including what they eat at home, and including what is eaten by their children at school through the school nutrition program. So I am saying, let us park this, let us put it as a matter arising, so that even before we call in ESCOM to come and explain. We go back to our study group and look at our policy position and understand what we mean by radical socio-economic transformation in the country. Because radical socio-economic transformation doesn't only look at how much government is spending in buying one particular the price tag. Radical socio-economic transformation speaks about the number of things, so that when we come back, we will be discussing for policy positions of political parties represented here.
Madam Chair, thank you. I don't disagree with anything you said. It's an actual number that we need to interrogate. I request that the VA makes a submission to the committee. And clearly the ANC is entitled to, as well as obviously the other parties. And that this becomes a discussion, a matter for the committee to deliberate at a future meeting, and that we should maybe invite other people to come to the committee to present on the issue of the, essentially what we're looking at is the overall economic cost benefit of localization. Bearing in mind all your externalities.
Social economic.
Yeah, social economic, 100%. You know, clearly there are huge externalities to create jobs, and those are important factors that need to be considered. But I think that the amount of money we're talking about is so enormous, and it also raises the issue that you pointed out, that it, which were a limit of silos. And that is that ESCOM was operating in a silo in this respect. They weren't considering as well with, as we can understand, the broader socio-economic impact of the investment. So I would suggest that early next year we maybe look at this as an issue to deliberate, and that we get some economists to come and present on the Thank you, Chair.
I agree with the way we are running the issue. But what I'm immediately saying, even before we go to the meeting we're getting to have, is that as a matter of principle, we must localize and beneficiate as much as we can at the hands, as a matter of principle. And then, so that having adopted that principle, we then see what fits into that and what doesn't fit. I'm really stressing that we must, the principle I assume all of us do agree, that we must say as a matter of principle, we would like to localize, we would like to beneficiate, and then we then look at the case by case on different issues.
Yes, let us agree in this meeting so that we reflect to that in the minutes of this meeting. That is, during when the social controls are talking to me, the next time, and that requires us to say that we can. And that method is the issue of ESCOM, the solar level, the amount invested, the number of solar levels, and the number of jobs.
So that we agree what is the best thing to do. So I am proposing that case. We
Yes, I am. I think if we need to frame the discussion carefully, that anybody that we invite to come present is fully briefed as to the purpose of this deliberation. And it's certainly going to start with an essence, and the figure that has been given will be very illustrative, but I don't think it should stop there. Because, you know, the issue of localization, as I'm sure Honourable Congi will test, is an issue which covers the broad economy and has a very important impact with the BPI and other economic clusters to come.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me introduce myself. My name is Anton Honnekom. I'm the Executive Director for Plastics SA. With me is Sibella Kapula. He's the Manager for Corporate and Government Affairs. He's part of my management team as well. So, Chair, just to the reason why we approach you, and it comes out in my presentation as well, is that if one looks at the plastics industry, although it's a big industry, it's predominantly small and medium-sized enterprises. Hence the direct link to this portfolio committee in terms of the makeup of the industry and how we operate. Let me just say thank you for the opportunity to be here and to present the plastic industry case and just to put forward maybe as a starting point what the industry looks like and how we operate and what the challenges that we are facing. I hear the debate this morning in terms of localization and beneficiation, things like that, and it's really impacting on the industry and sometimes unintendedly a negative impact. And we would like to put some of those issues on the table and explain why we say that and see how we can deal with that going forward. We believe that the industry is probably a key to the South African economy. If one takes plastics, it's really part of everyday life, but it's also cross-cutting across various sectors. And hence, we talk about the various things that we produce in South Africa. Plastic has a link to that somewhere in the process. Even the clothes that we wear, a lot of that is plastic. If it doesn't have pure cotton, it might have polymers in there. The carpet and it can carry on. There's a lot of things that relates back to plastic. I have prepared a slide presentation. It's a lot of slides. I'm not going through that in detail. I will touch on certain parts. I think the rest of the slide is very simple, very easy to follow in the sense that members can read that later on as well to give an update. Maybe apologies to Honourable Mkongi. You probably have heard some of the presentation before at Economic Development Trading. So apologies for that as well. Let me explain who the plastics industry is. We are a section, a non-profit company, registered as a non-profit company. We exist since 1975. We are representing the whole industry. So if you want to look at the value chain of the plastics industry, we represent from the raw material manufacturers, the importers of raw materials, right through to the manufacturers, or we call them converters. We also deal with fabricators. A lot of people don't know that one can weld plastic, so a lot of the pipelines and things are plastic pipes that is welded. We refer to that as fabrication. And obviously, at the end of the life cycle, the plastic doesn't stop there, the value doesn't stop there. The recycling part of plastic is very critical and an important part of our economy. We are typically a federation of associations, so within the plastics industry there's about 14-15 different associations, and we are a federation then of those different associations, which through them we represent the whole industry. We also Chair really is an accredited training provider as part of our function, which is different to probably some of the other associations. We also provide a training service to the industry, where we're the major provider of technical training, management training to the industry. Our vision at the end of the day, Chair, is really to enable a vibrant and a sustainable plastics industry in South Africa. I'm not going through the details, but maybe if I can summarize that in one word, that is growth. So how do we grow the industry? And if one looks currently at the state of the industry, we really find the industry under stress. It's distressed, we're losing manufacturing capabilities. We are not growing at the moment the way that we should do. Yes, if I look at the year-on-year sort of growth, we're still looking around 2-2.5%. But the industry being cutting across all the other sectors should really grow much more than this. So we are concerned as the industry is that there are certain things that are limiting the growth within the industry. I think if we look at growth, we talk about job creation, we talk about equality, we talk about poverty alleviation. All of those things are possible if the industry can grow. And coming back, we are small companies. So by growing that, we will create more capacity and a bigger market size, but I'll come back to that as well. As an industry body, we really focus on four or five main areas that is the focus of Plastics SA, the one is advocacy and discussions with government, and here I refer to the different levels of government. We also engage with municipalities around specific areas, for example, the township economy. So we are busy engaging along those lines as well. We provide a sustainability function. It's focused mainly around recycling, and I believe there's a huge growth opportunity within the recycling industry. But it's not just recycling, it's really dealing with sustainability, energy efficiency, productivity, the broad context of sustainability of the industry. As I mentioned, we are a training provider, so we are providing a training service to the industry. We also do research, where we focus on industry information. Unfortunately, this is still a grey area. We're still working strongly on this and developing new capacities in terms of the numbers. And I know there will be probably a lot of questions around the industry. I will try and answer what we have, but it is a grey area that we need to work on. And then communication, a big part of plastics. And I think if one just thinks broadly, plastics is often been seen as the bad material in the industry and the economy, and negatively saying because of maybe waste, which I believe is not the material itself, it's very often human behavior that results in that. But we need to do a lot of communication in terms of promoting the material, promoting the benefits of plastics as the material of the future as well. Chair, this is just my executive team. I'm not going through that necessary. If I focus more on specific strategic objectives, I think I'm going to that in the interest of time. I will come back to that when we deal with a little bit more detail at a later stage. But the focus is really, at the end of the day, as I mentioned before, it's growth. And everything that we do is focusing back on how can we help the industry then to grow. Honourable Chair, you need to understand that we don't have direct influence in the sense that we can tell companies what to do. It's influencing basis. We have to create the environment in which they can grow and help them that they don't necessarily do the wrong things or the things that take the time, but they can focus on the production process. So that is predominantly the area in that process. We had recently, last week and Wednesday and Thursday, on 13th of November, we had a big session with the industry, where the industry was invited, and the whole purpose of this was just to refocus and to relook at our strategy and the things that we're doing. Part of that is looking at the National Development Plan, looking at the different imperatives of the country, but also looking at the industry and say, what is the stuff that we need to do to grow the industry, and how does that align in terms of the broader economic direction and strategy of the country. We focused really, we didn't make huge changes to our focus, but I think what came out clearly is there are four specific initiatives, and I need to apologize, I don't have all the details of these initiatives, and some of them are new things that's been created. There's a new focus. I have until March, when the next board meeting is taking place, to really develop this in more detail, and operational plans, the specific things we need to implement. But the four areas that we've got to use on zero plastics to landfill by 2030, it ties in with the NDP. But what we try to do here is it's an aspirational vision. We don't believe that there will be zero waste going to landfill, but it helps us to focus and target. We sit currently with 6% of all the material that's produced in South Africa that does get recycled at the end of the day into new products. We believe that if we put proper infrastructure in place, like separation of pools, we can increase this quantum and we will be less dependent on renewable energy or energy that's fossil fuel where plastics are coming from. It deals with the waste management issue, and there are some concerns. I would like to come back to that on the Waste Management Amendment Act, which potentially, if incorrectly implemented, could threaten the current voluntary systems that are in place, which creates employment for 40,000 people in the informal sector already, and is helping us to clean up the environment at the end of the day. The other area is growth through exports and import replacement. We talk about regional integration. That is the approach that we try to follow. But if I show you a graph later on imports, you see a huge growth in terms of imports. Very often cheap imports coming from the east specifically. Looking at the pressures that the consumers are under, very often they buy the cheaper products, which indirectly mean less local material, local products are manufactured at the end of the day. And we have that negative spiral at the end of the day that we lose jobs at the end of the day because the company can't sustain themselves. Around that is exports in terms of Africa, but also broader into the Europe is still currently one of our bigger export markets, but Europe is not recovering after the 28th economic crisis, so our markets have shrunk in that sense as well. Innovation and skill development, I think one of the critical people in the industry is that we've lost that innovative, that entrepreneurial skill. A couple of years back, people remember we had the creepy crawlies and things like that flooded the market worldwide. We seem to have lost that research and development niche. We don't have those capabilities as well. We've lost that entrepreneurial skill, and I think part of that is that companies are very focused on survival at the moment because of pressures they experience, the margins are low, and hence it's more focusing on a month-to-month basis rather than focusing on the broader niche products that we need to create. In South Africa, the industry, I think, has a lot of commodity products, if I can call it that way. We do a lot of these water bottles, and there's various companies, and we all compete for the same market, and the prices is under pressure because it's a cutthroat business. We produce a lot of other similar products, and the focus should be through innovation and start looking at niche products. Value add at the end of the day, if I can use the example for that, and Chair, you've mentioned in the beginning, it's something like futures where there's a value add. It's different parts that's produced, it can be assembled, that creates jobs, it needs to be sterilized, it needs to be packed into plastic bags. That will create value-added jobs. It's not the value of the raw material, but it's what you do with that and in the process that you add to it. So I think part of this process here is really to look at innovation and to stimulate R&D again, research and development. Also linked to this is plastics approaches that is implemented, and I'm busy with DTI at the moment, where we are looking at training unemployed people on a set level, which is the key link for the industry. The sector is controlling the process and setting it up and the critical skills. We have a shortage of those sort of people that through the current ecosystem, there's not enough money coming back to the industry or for a provider like ourselves to develop those skills. So hence we created a cluster where through the industry, we can, we're looking at 120 people, which is a three-year program. We can enhance that even further. And the last one, the last initiative that we're working on is real partnerships with public-private partnerships with government. We are small in that sense. We don't have funds, but we believe we can bring a lot of expertise as well and opportunity to the table, and we need to find those partnerships that, that we can help and both further. And share maybe part of that is the discussions that we have with the portfolio committee as well, is to say, but what is your focus, what are the things that, that the committee is focusing on, and what is relevant to us to engage on and see how we can develop more and more business. I'm not going through the board. The board is really members from the various associations and some of the industry players. Chair, then I'll just add a few slides around the processes. This is not all the processes, and this is just really to give you an indication of the equipment that you're working with and the differences that you deal with. There's only four processes. There's a lot of processes that we're dealing with, there's a lot of material that we deal with, and then in that there's a lot of variations in terms of assets and things that people add to it. So it is a complex industry. One think about plastics, that it's all the same, that plastics are different. It melts at different temperatures, it has different properties, different protection things. If you look at food, it has specific barriers built in to protect the food at the end of the day. And hence it makes it difficult, different from another plastic material, and when you recycle it, you can't mix it all together, you have to separate it again to have it recycled in different teams, because you can't mix it, it will have an impact on the, your final product. This is injection molding. It's typically, all the machines have similar things. There's a barrel where you put the raw material in, there's a barrel, a hopper, then a barrel and a screw that will turn and it will create heat. The heat process, it will melt the plastic, and then the pressure is injected in this case into a specific cavity that will take the product. If you deal with the other processes, it's a similar process of a hopper and a barrel. The spin is different, and that will create the product. In this case, injection molding is typical things like buckets and brooms and anything that's like plates and things. That's all injection molded. If I go into low film extrusion, that's typically where your plastic bags and things are made. It's a sheet that's created. It either then sealed back into a bag, or it can be opened up to provide waterproofing, for example, if you build a house. And underneath the floor, you will have a barrier, which is a plastic sheet, to protect it from water. We also have things like blow molding. Typical your milk bottles, egg bottle with a screw top on top that's smaller, that will be bone molded. It's also a different process that involves with that. And then maybe just the fourth one that I can refer to is replacement molding. This is very dependent on gas or oil heaters and things. It's a process where the mold will rotate on different axis. There's a power inside, it gets heated up, and as it rotates, it will cover the inside of the mold and create a hollow product. Typical examples, if one looks at the roads, maintenance of roads, which is, have these barriers, the yellow barriers and things, that's all rotated and molded, as the example. All the JoJo tanks, I think everybody knows the JoJo tanks, that's rotation molded, that's the typical example of that. If I can take a few minutes just to look at the specifics of the industry, just like I said, this is really integrated with the whole economy. It's part of every subject, either as an input or part of a finished product. We are looking at roughly 1,800 companies in South Africa. They are predominantly small companies, SMEs, and many of these companies are also family-owned businesses. The industry is a fairly young industry, probably starts in the late 1950s. The first sort of pioneers in plastics in South Africa was toolmakers from Europe, mainly from Germany, that have entered the country and saw the opportunity, and they created plastics industry. So a lot of those companies are still in the family, the third generation, that it is for family owned businesses. We convert, if I say convert, that is the material that we take and produce a product from, roughly 1,800 tons, 1.8 million tons per annum. And additional to that is about 280,000 ton recycled material that we are using to add to the virgin material to create products. So a lot of the products that we are using have a mixture of recyclers in that as well. We employ more than 60,000 people on a formal basis in the industry. Chair, this number often differs from that of South Africa. They're using a different way of calculating it. If one look at the HS tariff code, they're only looking at tariff code 39, which is the bulk of the plastics. But plastics also sits in other tariff codes because of the integration. And SAFSA, for example, doesn't take that into account. They're only looking at a certain SIC code and a certain tariff code. Of this 1.8 million tons that we are converting, roughly 55% of that material is going into packaging material. Anything to deal with water bottles, packaging that will protect your food. Just interest that worldwide more than a third of all food produced are lost, is wasted. Hence, a small 5 or 2 grams of a plastic film covering a cucumber will save that the shelf life is extended by another 3 weeks. So it's just plastics has a role to play in the food procurement of the world. 55% goes into packaging, and in the industry, our GDP contribution to South Africa GDP is around 50 billion rand per annum. Those 1.8 million tons are used in the following sub-sectors. Like I said, the two bottom ones are the packaging, flexible and non-flexible, rigid. That makes up 35%. The next big one is your building and construction. Since 2010, that has increased. There's a lot of plastics used in construction and building. Cables, barriers for heat on the roof, carpets, ceiling boards. That's quite... we've seen quite a growth in the last 10 years in that specific area. Electrical and electronic side, I think there's a big growth, but still we don't manufacture any major electronic appliances here. All TVs are still imported. We assemble them now in Atlantis, but a lot of that is all parts that have been imported. Automotive, we think that automotive is quite big in South Africa. It is in terms of the exports and motors manufactured. The percentage of plastics, however, is limited. And the reason for that is even through the APDP, we say that the plastics will, the components will grow from 40 to 60% in the motor car and automotive. Very often those materials are sourced from overseas and is imported. The OEMs are international companies. It takes them some 7 years to develop a new car, and they will develop it, for example, sorry, my apology, Chair. Yes, the government. Chair, I will continue. I'll finish. But very often the quantities are set in Europe, for example. The quantities for a bumper are small. If one look at BMW, for example, to use the name, the bumpers of every one of the ranges or the series are different materials. So the quantities are different. It's differently spec. It doesn't help the local industry around that. Maybe just the last comment on this, if one compares this with Europe, which is an established nation, their packaging is around 40%, 39%. Ours is around 55%. The question is our packaging just so well developed, or is it rather a question that the other sectors are underdeveloped? And my view is more that maybe the other sectors, if we can grow that so the 55% becomes a 38% or a 35%, I think it will give indication of the growth of the sector potentially, because those areas are rather weak. We don't manufacture any choice, for example, in South Africa. Just the GDP contribution, Chair, I want to come back to that. I have indicated that it's about 50 billion rand contribution. Plastics contribute 1.6%. In terms of manufacturing, we're contributing 14.2%. So it's a big part of the industry. But maybe my point at the bottom there is that in terms of the multiplier, plastic is a good multiplier in terms of the economy, where for every one rand you spend on plastic, be it technology and things, it has a multiplier effect of 2.7. In terms of labor, for every one job you create in plastics, it will have a multiplier effect of 3.7, a factor of that. So again, it stresses the importance of plastics in South Africa. Chief, if I can look at the value add and the performance over the last 12 years, and this is now difficult. I don't have a pointer, but if I can just
do a wrong thing, this is the line that I'm referring to, this one that's going down the
side. If one look at the value add of the plastic industry over the last couple of years, since 2002, we took that first dip, it recovered slightly by 2007, but since then it is under constant pressure. Exchange rate has impact on that. There's a number of other factors. I think we compared here with non-commodity industries. I think that's the wrong comparison, because if I just take electricity, for example, the supply of electricity is critical to the plastics industry. If there's a blackout, for example, it takes us a day to a couple of days to get machines up and running again, where other non-commodity industries, you switch on the switch and you stop them using your computer or your machine again. So for plastics, it has a huge impact. So the industry is under pressure. This is a research that the Department of Trade and Industry has done recently. If one, however, looks at the growth of the raw materials, and early on I just indicated we had a 2.2% growth from 2012 to 2013. If one looks at the tonnage that we converted per annum, there's a constant growth in terms of that. We've seen two dips below zero where it was negative. The first one was in 2009. That is just we had a lag from the world economic crisis. So that took us down negative in 2009. But in 2011, we see another smaller dip, negative growth. Chair, I think that's an overstatement or understatement with the 2010 World Soccer Cup that we had. We had a huge expectation of numbers of people that will come in, more water bottles that will be used, more products that will be used. That did not materialize. A lot of the companies have bought extra raw materials and stocked up in order to produce for this event. And at the end of the year, they sit with stock in their stores. And the impact of that, the next year, they haven't purchased more material. So I think the 2010 is an overstatement, because of the extra material that was purchased. 2011 was a drop because people didn't buy, they still had stock in place. So I just want to put that in perspective. But if one look over the period of the last 10 years, 12 years, there's a substantial growth year on year in terms of plastics. Given that a lot of products, there's a big rise in the industry to lightweight a lot of the products. For example, this bottle is much thinner than it was, not this one specific chair, I don't think this is local. A lot of the products that we produce, is the wall thickness is much thinner now than what it was a couple of years back. So we produce more, we use more tonnage, but the product becomes lightweight. Okay. Yeah, I will probably retract the statement for now. I look at the name of the company and I don't recognize the name. So I'm looking at the bottle, at the bottom who produced it. It's not a familiar name. It's bottled in South Africa, but I don't know the name. And I would rather first go and do my homework before I repeat that. So I would rather withdraw that check.
Well, thank you for asking the question. I think we must not be shaken by what you are saying, even this process. The population growth has not shrunk. So it's the same problem for our ministry. So we must not be shaken.
So we'll come back to that, and it deals with the beneficiation of law and local content. Is that even if I take it that when these are tendered and procured, we procure water bottles, we procure the water, not the bottle. So where the bottle is very often coming from, we don't check that. Although it's plastics, and if it's not locally produced, it takes business away. But I'll come back to that. Sure, I would rather make sure of my facts before I say something like that. I apologize. One of the scary parts for the industry is imports. And this graph just shows you what's happening in terms of our imports. The top line is the imports. And you can see that's growing. It's going up. There's a huge multiplier in there. And the bottom line is exports. So yes, we are exporting. I don't think we export enough. I don't think we have enough support to help the industry. The industry, the market locally is very small. So we compete with places like China where they run one product on one machine 365 days, 24 hours a day. They don't do multiple changes. In South Africa, which makes them much more cost competitive. In South Africa, we need to run so many different prices that the market is so small that we probably do 3 or 4 mold changes per day that can take up to 2 hours to do that.
So just for the committed information, Moro is produced at Cape Town.
Is it produced?
I'll just check. It's a Cape Town based company. Yeah. The manufacturer of the bottle.
And my apology once again for questioning that. I will do my homework. Actually, we start importing more products cheaper than what we can produce locally, and it's a question of competitiveness locally, and why can't we compete with the same prices? But very often we deal with international chains, brand owners that get material from overseas, wherever, and they can get it much cheaper because of the volume. And they put the industry under a lot of pressure to match those sort of prices. We've seen two cases lately where we couldn't, in that sort of packaging, we couldn't match the prices. And international companies, supported by the incentive schemes, put up factories in South Africa, and they taking the business away. At least they're still producing in South Africa, but the technology and everything else is not so good. We coming back to one of our initiatives, exports, looking at the region, looking at how we can help the industry to create better export opportunity and make them export ready. It's quite a big challenge that we have. There is more information around recycling. I mentioned 280,000 tons that we recycle. There's approximately 230 recycling companies, mainly SMEs. We see an increase of about 30 companies per annum in this sector where we're growing, but we also see about 30 or 66% of that 20 companies that's closing down. It's a very challenging business at the moment. We don't get enough clean constant stream of waste coming in to keep these companies busy. We have a shortage of waste at the moment, to such extent that we start importing plastic waste from other countries, which doesn't make sense. But we don't have separation of source where waste can be captured before it goes to landfill, and it needs to be collected there under not very good conditions. Hence our discussion with municipalities and DKI and DIA for that matter to say that we need separation of source where households are separated with proper infrastructure in order to have less waste to landfill, but also create more jobs in this project. 18.6% of all plastics are recycled. If we look at the packaging one, it's about 6%. It sounds like low numbers, but if one compares this with Europe, for example, our numbers are world class in terms of recycling, on mechanical recycling. Very often Europe will indicate numbers like 90-99% that is diverted from landfill, and a lot of that waste is incinerated or is energy from fuel, energy from waste or fuel from it, where it's incinerated to create energy. And the demand for energy is much higher than ours, and well, it was probably in the past, ours is now critical. But in South Africa, we don't have any energy from waste commercial plants that are operational. We can take plastic waste back to fuel, to diesel, to marine diesel that can be used. We don't have that in South Africa either. There's a lot of research and development required for that. There's a lot of opportunities to be created. Just a word of caution, I know that some provinces are looking at this, but one has to keep the science in mind. We're putting big plants in, for example, in Cape Town. The question is, where will we get the waste from? Because it will absorb too much waste, and we currently have a problem in sorting it. The proposal here is that when we look at rural areas specifically, one put in smaller incinerators, and I don't want to use the word incinerator, but plants that will produce electricity that you can use it there for that community, collected by the community, the waste, but you use it to power a clinic or the police station or school where there's electricity then provided by the waste collected in that area. Or even if you go to the pyrolysis place where you take it back to diesel, is that one can run maybe the municipality fleet or trucks collecting the waste and things of the same fuel. We need to create just think differently, but we need to also think in terms of the size relevant to what we want to achieve in that area. There's a lot of waste in the country, but every time you pick it up, there's a cost involved. If you transport it to the next town, there's a cost involved. It needs to be separated, as I explained, because you need to get the material separated, there's a cost involved. If you go to too many of those steps, it makes the waste uneconomical to recycle and to sell again. So one has to think of where it's created or where it's been used and how do we use that specific form. Chair, I've dealt with this as well briefly. We're really collecting most of the waste in South Africa from landfill. It's dirty. It needs to be separated. The conditions are horrible. The problem is that the recyclers now invest, where they invest in money, in washing bays where they can clean the material, where we should rather focus on the machines that will process the material and create the pellets again. So our investments are incorrect because of the material that we receive at the surface, which will have a huge impact in our productivity and efficiencies and competitiveness and at the end of the day as well. So I mentioned a couple of issues there. I think I dealt with that as we move on. Currently, all of this recycling is done through a voluntary EDR system, extended producer responsibility system within the industry. It's a voluntary basis. We believe that with the necessary report, there's a lot of free riders we can have this result, and that there's a lot of opportunities for co-ops and small businesses to be created in this process. We're currently talking to Coal Park, that's close to Tuffelberg from the Belt Park, where we deal with the Waste Pickers Association. We're dealing with the trolley brigade, that's the people with big trolleys full of plastics that you see along the road. They're now building a MRF, a material recovery facility, in that area where the community will get involved and there's cooperatives that's been created. That will be launched next week on Thursday, so I do open the invitation if one of the honourable members wish to attend, we can arrange that as well. Here the rest is just a bit more around sustainability. I'm going to skip the sustainability part. Maybe just important to note is that more than 60,000 people were reached during last year in terms of material, and the focus is predominantly on recycling and the importance of recycling. We have trained more than 800 cooperative members and small businesses, waste pickers, in collection of waste and to help them to establish their own business in the waste sector. We do also a lot of resource efficiency, but I think I've mentioned that. Next area, advocacy, Chair, I'm going to skip that as well. Maybe just on training. We train more than 3,000 people per annum. Which we do is predominantly employed people. They are also unemployed. Of this ratio, Chair, roughly 18% would be females that we train, 98% would be black people that we train. Like I mentioned before, there's a huge need for more setters. For the first time in South Africa, the setter occupation has been classified as a trade. We have some difficulties getting it through SAFRA at the moment. It's been stuck there for 2 years. It's been approved by the QTTO. Once that's in place, we'll create the trade test for that and create the qualification. We hope to start training through a cluster initiative roughly 120 people. Predominantly, Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN, we run free training facilities and we'll be trained from that. These people will, if we start and we get your approval, will be trained immediately, receive a contract with a company, though they will be linked to a company, where they will get the theoretical and practical training for Plastics SA and they will have experience through the company for the 3 years that they will be in training. This will enable them either to be employed by that company, but will give them also good skills, if we talk about black entrepreneurs and industrialists, where they will be able to have enough knowledge and understanding to create a small business or link it up with a bigger company. Most of the training we do is either learnerships, which is a full one-year program, or skills programs, that is building blocks of qualification that people can do. We also do training for engineers as part of their continuous professional development point, because they don't get exposure to plastics at the tertiary education, so there's a big need in terms of getting them up to speed, specifically civil engineers and so on that look at big construction projects and things like that. Chair, I wanted to show you some of the radio advertisements on the TV, but I will send the link to the TV one. I don't have audio here. This TV advertisement is produced based on a real life story of Mama Dora, who is supporting her family through recycling. So she collects waste from suburbs, and she's selling that, and through that she has created a sustainable job and a meaningful job for herself and her family, and horrible chance it didn't cost 35 million rand to create it. It was much cheaper than that. And I would like to just show you a couple of slides in conclusion then, where we sit with some challenges as a plastic industry that we are experiencing. And some of that has been already been reflected on and discussed, but I would like to just to reflect on that again. It's not in a specific sequence. Chair, it's probably a little bit all over the place, but I think it does indicate that the sort of problems that we experience. The last slide that in my pack, you'll see it's a circle diagram. It's an integrated approach. Maybe let me just skim through that quickly. It looks like this, Chair. And it's very crude, simplified process, maybe of a very complex system and things. But what I'm really saying is that in order for us to grow, we need to be integrated. We should not look at just one element and say, oh, if we fix the price of raw material through downstream beneficiation, we will make the industry more competitive. There's too many factors that need to be consulted or incorporated, and we need to move away from the silo or ad hoc approach and look at things holistically. One can look at plastic sector and say, if we want to protect it or support it and we want it to grow, what is the policies that are currently affecting it? What is the incentives that are currently available to the industry, and why is the industry not taking up the incentives? What is the R&D that's taking place? What's the labor situation? What are we doing around standards? Do we have standards that we can use as non-tariff barriers maybe for imports that still maintain a high level of quality? So Chief, I'll come back to this again, but I think one needs to think broader and say, how, if you want to grow the industry, what is it that you need to do, and all those sort of things have an impact on that. If I then look at some of the challenges that we experience, Chair, we're asking for a customized incentive program, and it's something that we are currently in discussion with the IDC, similar to the clubbing and the textile industry. Currently, if one look at the incentives from the IDC, there's about 100 million rand that's been utilized annually from the plastics industry. And it's mainly from the bigger companies, and it's mainly from the packaging side. And the question is why, and very often it's the criteria that's been used. and one has to say that, that if we look at the clothing industry and maybe to help plastic as well, we should look at something similar to that which is customized. Cost of input material, I don't want to go there, I still sub judice with the competition tribunal. That very often price of raw materials being used as a big issue and the reason why we're not competitive. Chair, my view again, I don't think one thing will change. One swallow doesn't make the summer. One needs to look at the other things as well and see how that impacts. I don't think by just changing the price, we will see a change within the industry. Provincial procurement currently, the chair is not working for us, and I say it with a lot of sensitivity, but we're not seeing the benefits of that at the moment. And let me explain that quickly. Since the 7th of December 2011, when the procurement was introduced, we have failed to secure any designation of any plastic products. And it's not by a lack of trying to do that, but it very often, and coming back to the water bottle, when there's procurement taking place, it's water that we procure, it's not the bottle. When we procure the HIV test kit to test for HIV, we procure the test kit. But if you look at the test kit, there's a lot of plastic products or containers in there that contain the chemicals and that you do the testing. But we don't procure plastics. Plastics is very often input or secondary product within what we procure. We don't procure a plastic bumper, we procure a comp. We don't procure a pen, we buy stationery, which is a tender process. Hence, plastics are often not, even if we want to consider it, it's not part of the tender process because it's a secondary input. And I've mentioned it to the chair as well, but Brazil, for example, have designated plastics as the industry and not the specific product. And I think we need to look at something like that where the industry is designated and say any, if we want to buy any products and there's plastics involved, is that locally produced? Because that will create localization, that will create beneficiation, that will create jobs. If one look at the SIS program, those 19 programs, there's a lot of construction involved there. It's put out on 10 on the construction level. We say when you get to the material, the bill of materials, we specify what materials it's been used, plastics fit in there somewhere. And because it's not in the tender, it doesn't come through and doesn't help us as such. So I'm not sure if that, I'm making myself clear. It's complex, but plastics is very often a secondary material or product and it's not procured specifically.
Can you make an example of the dress
and the haircut? Chile, we had many small companies in South Africa that have manufactured hangers for clothes. A lot of that was also then collected from the retailers, again recycled, and it was created back into hangers or things like that. The current practice is that there's not many of these companies left in South Africa, and the reason is that when we purchase clothing these days from wherever we bring it in, it comes in already packed with a hanger, with a plastic cover over it, with a label and everything already done. All that the retailers need to do is to hang it up and sell it. So unintendedly, the practice has an impact on the industry as well. And that's why I say it's cross-cutting as well. We are not benefiting from that. Chair, you mentioned syringes. We had four companies producing syringes in South Africa. There was a big one here in the Strand area. They closed down all of them. We don't produce that anymore. It's all imported at the moment, and we import by the millions syringes. Again, maybe that's something that through Department of Health one can easily change, because that's a specific product that one import or designate or put out for tender. Problems, we don't have companies, and based on the rules of local procurement, or the preferential procurement, you can't designate a product if it's not locally produced. And so syringes we can't have designated, although the facilities exist, and within 3 or 4 months companies can reproduce or can start producing syringes again. but because we can't designate it, we can't do that. Chair, something else, we often forget that when, if there's a guaranteed take-off for syringes, for example, and we know that there's going to be, let's say, just a million every year, companies can invest accordingly and they can make that investment. But very often your investment is a 5-year, 10-year, 15-year investment. Some of these machines cost 10 million rand. So it's a long-term investment. But the guarantees in terms of procurement is very often just for 1 year. So economically and financially in business, it doesn't make sense to do that investment if there's no guarantees of takeoff. And maybe that's something we need to look at as well, is if we look at local procurement, is that there's extension in terms of the time frame, with obviously checks and balances that we comply with the standards and in the context and so on. Chair, I refer very often to compliance costs, and it's something that one needs to probably do more work around. But I believe that in South Africa and in the plastic industry, the compliance cost is even between 5 and 15%. The cost has been added to our baseline, which makes us uncompetitive. We need to comply with certain legislation, and very often it's first world legislation. If I look at the Air Quality Act and the carbon tax that might come in, employment equity, those sort of things. I'm not arguing that at the moment. I'm saying is that it adds to the cost of our products, that when you compare it to imported stuff, if you take some of the Eastern countries, they don't have proper labor relations and stuff. They don't have the human rights is suspect sometimes, and it does make the cost of what they're bringing in is far cheaper. They don't need to comply with our environmental legislation and things. So although it's small percentages, it does have an impact on the baseline, and it makes the playing field uneven. It's not just to start off, it's not just being uncompetitive to start off with, but the playing field is uneven. Our level of export readiness in South Africa, I think in small companies, maybe our focus is not always on export, so there's a lot of work that we're planning to do currently around it, also in terms of the export strategy. But very often those strategies are focused just on black businesses. The industry is, there's a lot of family-owned businesses, there's a lot of black businesses as well. But it seems like the existing companies are also the ones benefiting from that. And it's a way how we implement these sort of things and how we make the industry ready and how do we help them to export. If we look at Africa is a difficult export market for a number of reasons, and it's how do we help industry, and it's not just plastics, to understand that and to create the right links and create the right market intelligence for us to compete and to export effectively. We have strong competition in terms of import. Chair, what I want to raise here is that very often stuff is imported. And if I use China, for example, is that if you import semi-finished products, it's very expensive. If you import finished products, it's much cheaper. And in those countries, there's a lot of subsidies and support for exports that make it, they can bring in products at the raw material price that we have locally, and we can't compete with that. Consumer and the pressure, so they will buy what is the cheapest in the variety that we have on the shelf. Technological upgrading, it comes back probably to incentives as well. We've seen early 2000s a lot of investments in new technology. We don't have any local machine suppliers in South Africa or manufacturers, so all our machines are imported. It comes at an exchange rate cost for us. It puts some pressure in terms of time frames for things, but it's all part of the technology investment as well, that we need to create probably a customized program, but that there's more money available for incentives. And it's not just, I want to raise that it say that it will reduce jobs as well. It's not necessarily the case. I think we need to grow the market. We need to compete internationally, so we need to create the volumes. But by doing that, it creates other jobs around that, and one has to construct. Our infrastructure and the cost of logistics. To ship something from China to Durban, it's cheaper than to take it from Cape Town to Durban by road. It is a huge cost. in some cases, if we export stuff into Zimbabwe, road transport companies add another 8 days to the schedule because they get stuck at that date, which for that period. I know SARS was busy fixing this, but it's a cost. It adds to the cost, and it has a problem on the industry. Our tooling sector is weak with the problems from the industry. They created the National Tooling Initiative. There's quite a number of new learners in the system. But currently today, plastic industry is dependent on tools that we use to produce the product. Most of this, probably 90%, is imported from the world. The lag times are shorter, the heat times are shorter, the quality is better, but it does increase cost at the end of the day. And it is something that the industry is looking at as well. Our market is very small, actually refer to that as well. Our market compared to China, for example, India, is extremely small. I mentioned that we do more mold changes. We don't run a product 24/7, 365 days a year. And every mold change is a couple of hours downtime, the number of waste that's been produced until you get the product finalized again. So we have to increase our market exports as part of that. We also need to, because of the quantities, very often our prices is not as competitive because we do more changes and things. So some work needs to be done around this to see how one can increase that. I do want to touch just on the IDZ or the special economic zones. It is a possibility. I think if one looks at imports and we look at the replacement of imports, one can use these zones to look at those sort of products specifically. But one needs to be careful that we don't use those zones for foreign countries or companies to come in to compete with existing companies. So there's a risk to be involved there, and that probably needs to be discussed further. So I want to make the comment that trade agreements are not often favorable to the industry. On the one hand, we talk about beneficiation, we talk about local content, local growth of the industry. But when we enter into trade agreements, we are instructed very often to reduce the tariffs that we have and not to keep it at a certain level. And so the two things are going counterproductive. On the one hand, you want to grow it, but I think tariffs need to be considered in the longer term line, so that if we say we want to grow syringes, for example, or probably a wrong example, but if we want to grow a specific sector, let's look at the trade agreements that we have, make sure that those trade agreements support the development and beneficiation that we're trying to do. I want to deal with electricity briefly. It's not just the cost of electricity, and very often the municipalities is the problem for us. The ECOM has a certain price that municipalities add their price, and in winter times, when being an energy hungry industry, winter time we need more energy, and then very often it kicks a new sliding scale in that makes it more expensive. That's on the one hand a problem. Some companies calculated that if they move to another area, outside a certain municipality area, they will probably recover the cost within 10 years from the energy saving that they have. Our other problem is the unreliable supply of energy. When there's a blackout or with power cuts, very often the industry is not informed about that. That has an impact that the material burns within the barrel. And in order to start up your machine, you have to remove the screw, you have to remove the barrel. You need to literally chisel out the raw material because it's burned. That could take up a couple of days. That doesn't make us very competitive. So that sort of thing, it's not just the electricity price, it's the supply of that as well. Actually, I referred to training before, the 120 sectors was applied through NZEP beginning of the year to have a cluster approved so that we can run the program where we can train. It's a three-legged process. The intention is that we share the same equipment because it's used for either research, skills development, or for laboratories. This project has been turned down because the criteria have changed, and associations or industry bodies can no longer be part of the MC program. It's something that's changed. We submitted in January, it's changed in July. We are appealing to that, but it is a problem. We submitted before the change of the criteria, so we expect to be adjusted or evaluated against the old criteria. The issue why I'm raising it, it has an impact on even creation of SMEs and things like that. As I said earlier, this is critical to the industry. We can train 120 plus unemployed people, train them up for decent employment and a critical job in the industry, but we cannot proceed. Linked to that is the R&D that I refer to. Part of the process would be to create a research facility for, even if one look at the horrible challenges you mentioned around ECOM and the solar systems, a lot of that could possibly be replaced with plastic as well. So there's research opportunities that can make it cheaper. We don't have those sort of facilities in South Africa, and the intention is to create something where we can look at different markets and so on, specifically to increase recycled waste as well. Is what are we going to do with that? The laboratories, which is linked to this, a lot of the products that we want to export need to comply with certain criteria, like the REACH criteria in Europe and other criteria as well in India and so on. Currently, we ship those products to those countries to be tested in order to export it, which just adds another 8 months to a year to any export that we do. So we can't benefit from the rand exchange rate that is favorable for exports at the moment, because it takes longer to export that. I'm not sure if the committee can assist with this, but I wanted to write it because it has an impact on the industry. And then the last slide, Chair, and then I want to close. I believe that all the things that I've mentioned, one should not see in isolation, but one should see it as an integrated approach to this. It's not ad hoc. Everything that we do, even if we take syringes, in order to do that, we need to look at policy, we need to look at preferential procurement standards, and all the other things that I'm dealing with, even including raw material price that one can probably negotiate specifically for this initiative. But one has to do it in a holistic approach. Thank you to the committee for your patience and for listening to me.
I would want to know why, because it is an industry, it looks like a private firm or private company, and of course it is a private company, so we always know that private companies are real for profit. Now if it is a non-profit, what does that mean? And the Federation of Association also. Now, you say you are a representative of polymer producers, which I would say that polymer producers may be the same or sectors or industries that are producing a plastic. If you make plastic, then you chase plastic from them. Why you as a secondary sector become a representative? How can you represent a that is for this, that is giving a product to me inside our head. You like that understanding? You say that I represented polymer. Now polymer, I think you say polyethylene, then we produce plastic. Now, for them you are the secondary, because you may need extra after the program. But you say you represented, unlike them representing. So I just want to say that
they are not a company themselves. They are an NGO, like a chamber of business.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So they represent manufacturers of plastic.
But they represent producers.
Yes, manufacturers and producers are the same, but they are not themselves producing.
Oh, okay. No, fine. Now, yeah, that was a plan which I give you. I was very, very concerned. Now, Chair, coming to the contribution of GDP and to the manufacturers, it is clear that the loss that is done at that level. My question would be, do you see the chamber, in the chamber, one, do you see our trade and industry department big enough to can accommodate you as a chairman in totality to fulfill your money? The trade and industry, because here it is clear that you are basically related to the trade and industry by work. By virtue of what and operation, your contribution to the GDP of the country, your contribution to everything in the country, industrialization, home, manufacturing, everything that you are doing, it seems in that context. Now, when it comes to the trade and industry, and you have been waiting, I think you have been working with the trade and industry for some time. And you raise here in your pages challenges, and many of the challenges, they involve the issues of legislation. Legislation in Kenya. Many legislations that are making difficult for you to operate. And those legislations are falling under the trade and industry. That is my question. Looking at all the trade agreements, the cost of labor, productivity, all the things that you develop a special economic zone for the beneficiation, all the things, do you think that it is of assistance, the trade and industry, as the department in the country? Because looking at your whole package, it is cannot and welcome also your vision change, because I now understand why you have brought in these two acts from our country. I now understand, because in our country, this kind of issues are dealt with us. In our instances, it's a national bank, very big banks that, for instance, our trade and industry department can go part-time in our bank. To get able to deal with this kind of a loop. Now, it's so that our department here is sensitive for this clear understanding that we shall have to have that comparison. But lastly, do you think if it comes to push the department, the newly established department of SDG, can actually very closely work with you, you might be in a position to be a better assistant than what you see now, because What I see from your presentation is that you are far from reaching your goals over and above whatever Africans get from the trade leader. It is very, the cross interpretation, very, very difficult to get you to where you want to go and come to the real economic push in the country, so that whatever those creators out of your program, they are seen to be top adding value to the increase of the GDP in the country. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presenter. It was clear, it was thorough, although that the trees are a part of the money. And you for the material. Just one question, Chairperson. The entry point. On the slide on your vision, it is developing the skills needed to accreditation, your dream program. The entry point. Is this my chair? And also, I think plastic are like all over the country. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the wonderful presentation. I just have one question, which is in terms of the NDP challenge to the country of creating 11 million jobs by 2030. What do you think is the growth potential of your industry, of the plastics industry? And how many jobs in optimum circumstances do you think the industry would be able to create by 2030?
Thank you very much. My first question is about the two questions that need to be under challenge. And the first one being about being unable to compete initially because of productivity. Now, does that mean that our productivity is lower to other countries that are doing practice? Whether a comparative study has been made, and whether there is anything that they recommend this committee to try and help improve our productivity? And the second one, the impact of combined costs, which have created an uneven playing field. Obviously, if there's anything that government can do to help make up for the losses because of combined costs, has to be adjusted. Now, have you researched or have you looked into any specific thing that government can do to try and minimize or limit the gap that's caused by compliance costs that are imposed on local people?
No.
Okay.
Thank you,
Chair. I don't have a question. But first of all, thank you, Ms. Monica, for the presentation. I think this organization, as a portfolio committee, we need to study this organization. Because I know you're quite a keen person for a model, to work out a model. But I think if we study this organization better and understand exactly what is this whole plastic industry is all about, and then we do our study thoroughly, we can come up with a great model for this small business investment department. So that's all I would say. Thank you.
So,
question number two is about plastic industry statistics. You said estimated 1,600 competitors, mainly SMMEs. Maybe tell us if SMMEs can be applied for credit for the must know which is which group of the people was the one just as the
No, thank you very much. I also want to welcome the input from Fantastic. You know, Chairperson, what is happening is that if you look at the structure of Plastic South Africa, it talks to what it is happening in South Africa to assist the small business. You know, enterprises and so forth. But what is going to be fundamental, Mr. Anova? What the committee is what Honorable Mother would be inviting, which I am raising as a committee. Is the question of how far are you prepared to move to fundamentally transform this thing? To reflect the democracy. I understand the fact that these, most of them are family, you know, businesses and so forth, they are small and so forth. Because in the process of training black people and ambitious in particular, that would have been our achievement in terms of building African capabilities and capacities to lead the industry. Which could be one of your constraints on the question of the local settlement of the state. You know, that is very fundamental. I am very sympathetic to the challenges that are facing this industry. But I do not have a picture of the industry. Honorable Marlowe is asking his question, as a demographist, I've been asking this question in terms of the government, in the board, everywhere. Demographic, in terms of color, in terms of gender, in terms of disability, and in terms of age. That is fundamental into our transformation. The second thing that I want to raise, within your organogram, you put polymers as part and parcel of the people that are under the plastic industry. And the polymer is 60% of the input cost that are attributed to polymers. And the question of the input cost is one of the fundamental challenges of the industry to succeed because they are exorbitant. And now, if they are exorbitant, it makes it difficult for you to operate as industry into the downstream, you know, beneficiation process. So how that is possible? I know, for example, we have challenges with all other people and to send in very high, you know, prices in the coming products. So what can we do? Some of us were proposing that we need to have a developmental price. What is the position? A developmental pricing system or a discount system in terms of the material, the raw material and the input cost, particularly for the local industry. What is the position of Plastic South Africa on that matter? Do we support the program of the state? As you said, when we call it a fixed pricing system. When we talk about the fixed price, do you mean the developmental price are you talking about or the discount on the input cost of the raw material? You know, I related the question to the matter of administered prices. You talk about, because I think electricity is also an input cost. You know, and also I take labor as also an input cost, but those are the factors that assist you to produce some of this. Yeah? Which way can assist South Africa? There's a proposal by government of approaching what we call it an energy mix approach. You spoke about using plastic to generate electricity, which could be one of the issues that the state could take you can take your own waste and produce your own plastic. Well, what's the challenge? Why can't you produce your own electricity using your own waste and depending on Eskom and municipality? Is there any legislative constraint that makes you not to be able to build that capability to produce your own energy? So those are the few questions, but I have a number of questions which all said one thing that I want to ask, which I asked it before. I was approached early this year by two young girls. I was lecturing them in 1992. They are engineers today. They want to, they call it pyrolysis catalytic conversion of plastic into fuel. How could that be? Like? Because if you train people to assist us as government to produce more black, you call it in the service, or black small business people, do you have this as part of your training process? So they asked me about this one. They have done it before, but they have consulted, which happened to be white male old people that were asking them to absorb the crisis and then they went down. They could not sustain it. So how could we continue asking them? Thank you very much.
Just to make an addition to my second question about the compliance cost. The agenda for the compliance cost between 5 to 15%. So my question is that related to what the government can do to help. So ultimately there is an import tariff equivalent to 5 to 15%. Would that help your competitiveness and would that help the level of the price?
What I wanted to know is to what degree, when we look at the school thing, when we look at the early childhood thing, when we look at the trade, cabinet, what degree are those manufactured by yourself? And so that's one question. And then the other question is, to what degree do you relate to the development of higher education in terms of, you know, enhancing more South African made things. So, you know, because I see a mutual benefit to the Department of Higher Education and yourself. And then the machinery. If the machinery was manufactured in South Africa, will that cost you too much, or is that not an end? Your capabilities, you know, that the industry capabilities, the limits of language.
I also have my own questions. One is on the information company. I understand that you have mentioned that the company has SMB. But the question that I want to ask is how many of those companies are owned by the SMEs? In other words, we are now beginning to examine the relationship between the ownership of the companies and the economic transformation of the SMEs. Of ownership of the country. And also, we are looking at
the objective of the SDGs in terms of development of underdeveloped communities. Where are those ventures located? But also in terms of the creation, we are talking about ways for the society. And I'm very passionate about cooperation. And the speaker that you mentioned today is 40,000. And if one wants to look at a cooperative approach, if the way collectors are also an immediate way to collectors, they become also part, and then we call that job creation. And job creation that doesn't relate to ownership. In a cooperative context, the worker becomes also the owner. It should be that a risk collector can be a risk collector in a particular area to inform that they cannot go on. And then the factory, that goes into the byproduct, comes from our risk plastic and comes to the original company. That changes the ownership in this country. And it begins to assist people who would have remained workers, workers to become worker owners. It means the plan to which they serve the waste product also belongs to them. If then takes life, it begins to punish into the ownership issue, but also on poverty. Because no matter how you can do your end, by selling the way that you have collected, you will get a complement that. But what you will then get out of the product that is produced, because you are a shareholder in a company, in a cooperative that is producing that particular product, made out of the way that you collect. That is the difference. And the last issue for me is that, and maybe not today, because I don't think that this is the last issue, but in a follow-up, if you can list the alpha program and tell us how much of those products are sitting in the chamber and so on. Look at the kitchen. I found a lot of glasses. I also looked at bedroom. I went to the bathroom. The brush, toothbrush that I was using. The container of the toothpaste. The saltfish. And how does it? How do you see the plastic in that related to service delivery projects? Toilets are being built where they never existed. In school clinics and communities, roads, all these things, so that we can begin to have an understanding of the size of the market and public sector, and the size of the market at a retail center. You may not have the answer today, but it will be very much interesting because we are going to release your presentation today by American and by Brazilian to see what changes we can then make.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the committee for your work and the questions. I'll try to respond to everything. It's quite a long list, so if I do miss a question, please remind me, or If needed, I will respond later on then again. The first question, Honorable Ramaphosa, I think your first two questions have been dealt with. We're not manufacturing anything, we're purely representing as a body. Is the DTI enabled or capable of handling us and dealing with the issues? We deal with a number of departments. It's not just trade and industry. We have a close relationship with the Department of Environmental Affairs. We're building up, obviously, a higher education and training from the training side. So a lot of things we deal with is even Department of Labor. It's spread through everything because we are cross-cutting some of the sectors. I think the plastic as an industry, the question is probably, do we see plastic as a change, the key to the changes of the economy that we need? Is it going to be a game changer? And I think if we say that, and I know the Minister, Honourable Minister Davies, that have indicated already that plastic is quite key, but then we need to formalise that to a specific project where we say, or a program where we say this is what we want to do. I think currently there's a lot of programs implemented, but it doesn't necessarily talk to the needs and the challenges that we face. So my response would be, I think at the current moment we're not getting anywhere, not at the speed that we should transform the sector as well. And one has to have a focused approach to say that if plastics is a change agent or the game changer, what do we need to do? And I'm coming back with an integrated approach, and one will probably have to look at that and see how one deal with it. Small business development, I think there's a clear link from our side being small companies, and I do see that a lot of businesses can be created, jobs can be created, but hence our contact here. I think there's a role that the department can play and can help in terms of what we're trying to achieve. And I think we can contribute to what the department also wants to achieve in the committee. I hope that answers your question. Honourable Man, I'm not sure about your surname, apologies for that. Couldn't get that. Your question on qualifications, what's entry level? If one looks at the NQF levels, we started NQF level 2, which is standard 7, grade 9, standard 7 level in terms of the old terminology. The matric is very often a requirement, but when we train students, we take irrespective. When we deal with unemployed as well, we have, over the last 10 years, developed a psychometric assessment tool that we use to look at trainability and lateral ability. And we use that to select learners then that will go through that. And the success rate is quite phenomenal over the last 12 years. So very often we select people not with a matric, but with the abilities, and maybe having a grade 9, something like that. So that way we focus, we train up to NQF level 5, which is apprenticeship on the NQF level 4, matriculant is the NQF level 4, but that's on the machine and technical side that we do provide. We, if one look at the industry, you ask where are we based or where are we operational, the bulk of the plastics industry is in Gauteng, which is about 48% of the company. 24 in Cape Town, Western Cape, 24% in KwaZulu-Natal, and the rest is scattered through South Africa, so a little bit in East London, EE, mainly around the automotive side, and some in the Bupa and so on, some in the Free State, but it's far limited. So from a plastics airside side and a training side, we have training facilities here in Cape Town, in Mowbray. Lakeland, we have facilities in KwaZulu-Natal, and in Gauteng, Midrand, where our head office is, but also the training facility. So that's where we are based, and that's where we are doing the training from, and that's where the bulk of the industry is based. Some other question was asked around rural areas. The nature of plastic is very often that if you transport the empty bottle, you transport air. So you have a full load of the truck, but the weight of that is only a third of the weight that the truck is, can carry. You pay for the full truck load because the truck is running. So your transport cost is higher than for the quantity that you're transporting. So the nature of the business is that where the markets are, that's where the factories are, so that you don't transport air. You rather transport the raw material because it's more effective to do it that way. So we do not find a lot of manufacturing companies in rural areas specifically. That's the three main centers the companies are. Honorable Tom, how many jobs can we create under ideal optical circumstances? It's difficult to say. I would like to think that if one look at the imports and we replace the imports, that's probably a sense that we can add just to the GDP contribution by just replacing that. It seems it's 1,000 jobs, 10,000 jobs that one can create. But I think also in the informal side and the recycling side, there's a bigger multitude or multiplier that can happen there. We talk about cooperatives, we talk about collectives that can be organized. Very often they don't want to be organized from various reasons, but I think there we're dealing with 40,000 people. The calculation that's been used is that each of those informal collectors will collect about 60 kilograms of plastic per day over a 200-day period, given weekends since they don't operate. So just by doubling the planet in terms of recycling by having it separated at sort, you're probably looking at another 40,000 informal jobs that can potentially be formalized through cooperatives and small businesses. So it's difficult to give you exact numbers, but using those sort of thinking, we're not going to create 11 million, that's not going to be possible, but we can contribute to a substantial amount. Obviously, it's not, if we just double it, run double the employment because efficiencies and scale of economy kicks in as well, but we are looking at substantial numbers. Reverend Meshu, I remember, challenges. Our productivity, I think it's lower. I don't think there's some graph, and I don't have it here, and I don't have the exact details, but the indication is wages are growing and productivity is coming down, so that one has to look at in terms of why don't we compete, and can we not compete with that? I think just strikes has a huge impact on the industry, and maybe let me just explain, because the industry contributes input material to various sectors. When the main strike was going on for that 4 months, part of the sector was affected, producing product as an input into the mine sector. So the industry was negatively affected by that. Following through the automotive strike, that had a huge impact on the industry in terms of the parts that's been manufactured. So that we had our own strike as well. So those sort of things has an impact. It's not directly the industry that is on strike, but other industries have an input. And an impact on that. And I think that all adds to the uncompetitiveness of the industry at the end of the day. The compliance cost, what can government do to help us around that? You added the tariffs. We're far below the boundary for the tariffs that we started with. So that is option that one can look at the boundary of the tariff and say, let's increase it to that percentage. But that's very often a short-term remedy for 4 or 5 years to help the industry to establish itself or to regenerate itself. So that remains the option, although it's probably not a simple process to go through. There needs to be a lot of work that needs to be done. We also deal with a lot of anti-competitive sunset clauses and things where we have, against specific countries, some sunset clauses in for products for coming in. Uh, I think part of what one needs to do and where government can help is that when there's discussions is that one really look at the economic impact of decisions that, you know, I want to use the whole carbon tax that is on the cards and that's been extended for one year. It's good to have something like that, but what's the impact on industry? How does it compare with the world? It's good to have world standards in place, but for our economy, is that the right thing at the right moment to do? Are there not other ways of dealing with it? And to get to a carbon neutral sort of economy, are there not other incentives? So by adding this and to become world class in terms of the legislation that we put in place, we're very often impact on negatively on the capability of the industry. And I think that's the discussions that need to take place. But when we do trade agreements, is that we are open to say, but if industry indicated that they can't change certain tariff lines, is that we accept it and not saying, well, we negotiate and we take it away, because that's counterproductive. Mr. Kruger, thank you for your comments. I think we're happy to work with it. We might not have all the answers, but we'll try to be involved with that process. Honourable Monsi, the executive team is fairly new. I've become the executive director 3 years back. I've been in industry or at Plastics SA for the last 18 years. Since then, there's a lot of changes and focus that's set in place. On my team is two females, one is an Indian. Mr. Kapila is recently appointed, and the other director that I have is also been around for 20 years. So it's a very stable environment. There's not a lot of changes taking place, but when there's opportunities, we are bringing in. If I look at the broader industry, for a company, majority of people are people from companies. In terms of SMEs and the transformation that you ask, I don't have this. Let me say, if I look at SMEs, I use the Department of Labor sort of set of up to 49 people, small businesses up to 139 at medium size. So that's the approach that we follow. If one look at ownership, Honorable Becker as well, to your question. If one looks at KZN, the majority of the companies in KZN is Indian-owned business. In terms of the other areas, there are not that many. It is an area that we are working on. You see it also as part of our focus at the moment is that we look at SMEs and development. So that's the process that needs to take place. I want to say that at the current moment, the industry is not growing in the sense that there's new entrants coming in. So it's not that every day we create a new company that we can have transformation as part of the agenda. There are some companies that are slipping down at the moment. The ones that are actually starting up is big multinational that's coming into the country with support into various areas. So it is something that we are aware of, that we focus on. The question is how do we create new excitement around the industry, and that will be through growth, so that we can get black enterprises and entrepreneurs that say, I want to invest in the plastic industry and I want to develop it. So it's all about technical skills on the one hand. There are a number of black-owned companies, but it's mainly from a financial side that they've invested, and not necessarily on the operational side that they've taken place. But yeah, it remains a challenge for us as such. Honorable Mutongi, if I can enterprise creation or new black-owned businesses being created, I think if I look at the industry, there are enterprises created. If I can use some of the rotational molders, part of their process is to manufacture those molds, which is sheet metal that is welded and shaped into that specific mold so that it can be used for production. There are companies that have outsourced, not outsourced, that have created enterprises through those businesses. So the welders, the artisans that was in those functions, have become the owner of that. But it's all part of the value chain of the company. So the company is still committed to ensure that financially, in terms of planning, in terms of structures and things, that that individual is supported. Now, the original idea is that that person provides a service back to the company, completely independent. But that they also use that capacity that they have to create other work outside the company. So in this case, it's welding skills. They will create the one that I think of specifically has started creating burglar bars and iron doors and things like that as well. That adds to the business. He's still on the same premise. He's still independent. He can work whenever he works. But he's committed into the what he needs to deliver for the company. That the company is committed to provide the support that he, because if that person closes the doors, the company is in big trouble. So that sort of activity is taking place. But Immunity is not a black plastics company that's been created, it's a metal company ultimately, and that becomes part of the difficulties at the end of the day. So those sort of things are taking place at the end of the day. Your question around input costs, that's exorbitant. I tend to disagree from your service, saying that if one currently talks to importers of raw material, they can't compete with the local price. They will tell you they not, if the fossil or the petrol is produced or selling certain material, they will not enter into that market. They will rather focus on other areas. Plastic is an international commodity price, so it's a commodity determined price, and one can go into what should be the local price then. But I don't think it's exorbitant in that sense. There are questions, and I know the tribunal is still, there's appeal against that. But I personally don't believe that changing price would have the impact. I would rather say that, let's take syringes as an example, is that we say we want to create a syringe manufacturing capacity in South Africa. Is then enter into discussions and say that, what's the policies, that integrated approach? What are the policies? What's the standards? What are the things that we need to do? But input price of a raw material then becomes part of that discussion for that specific focus. I think that's much more useful and much more constructive at the end of the day, because you talk about specific things. If one looks at the raw materials, we import a lot of the specialty materials at the moment. The market is too small, nobody wants to invest in that specific area, so it's all a big commodity that is taking place. I do want to raise the shale gas issue in the Karoo. You can look at what's happening in America at the moment, where they have a lot of shale gas and they're developing that. It has a huge impact on the pricing and the availability and the dependence on crude oil for that matter. So in terms of the cost of the manufacturing, we manufacture our polymers from coal, because we have huge quantities of low-grade coal in South Africa that we couldn't sell, so it's been used for that purpose. But it's also a byproduct from producing petrol and diesel and things. But our technology is still a high-cost technology. So the shale gas that's been developed in America is of lower cost, and that directly has an impact on that. So the alternative would be, where the shale gas and should be not, maybe look at developments around that will change the game in South Africa as well. I hope that answered your question. The other one around energy for the grid. There are policies that say you can't incinerate and things like that. But currently with Eskom, many companies have tried to enter the grid and deliver stuff to put on the grid, which the licenses and things were not forthcoming for many years around that. Yes, it's a possibility, but one needs to look at the quantities as well. Companies itself, their focus is on manufacturing. They don't generate enough waste to really justify their own incinerator for to get them off the grid. But I still think that if one look at a smaller community and you put an incinerator there for them to sell enough electricity for the clinic or something, there's definitely an opportunity around, which could be a small business as well. But there's a lot of foreign countries coming in with technology around pyrolysis that you refer to and energy from waste. But I think, again, it's they talk to different people and different people do pilot runs, and there's no coherent approach to say that what do we need to do, and but what's our need at the end of the day. It's about getting rid of the waste in the streets, but there's more value in utilizing that waste back into another product or to another, the same product again. The value remains in that plastic than to incinerate it. We need to think about the tail ends, the things that we can't do anything with anymore. Put that into incinerating crap energy. So that should be the focus of the end of the day. The two ladies that you refer to in terms of pyrolysis, it's fairly new technology, even in Europe. They're doing a lot of energy from waste. We don't offer that as a program. I don't think any of the universities offer that in South Africa at the current moment. But there are companies locally that are piloting and developing the technology, so I'm happy to refer them to those companies for discussion on that. Honourable Mabasa, your questions around school furniture and things, it's an interesting question. I think there's a huge opportunity for that. It does require a mind change as well from, I'm sitting at the desk and it's wood and steel because that's what school is all about, to change different, or think differently about the environment. As part of the recycled yogurt cup that we have, we are making, the industry is making the tutu bits. You might have seen it, it's a flat sheet, it's circled like this, which they can use to put on their lap and to work. So even if you sit under a tree, you can have a desk that you can work on, and it's portable, and you can take it home with you, and you have a desk at home as well. Unfortunately, in South Africa, there was no demand for that. We are exporting that into Zambia and Kenya and those places. Locally, nobody has seen the industry, the Department of Education was not interested in looking at those sort of opportunities. So, yes, there are capacities. It can be done. Even the place cut on the playgrounds, the tubes and things, it is manufactured here. We are manufacturing PVC houses where you can build a two-bedroom house. You can erect it within a day. Cement floor, cables, electricity, everything working, roof on, you can plaster it, can look like a normal house. The response is, who wants to live in a plastic house? And therefore, there's no market for that. And it's serious that even if it's a transition from moving people from a squatter camp, but anyway, living under plastic sheets and things, to a proper house that they can break down and re-erect somewhere else where you need it, those sort of things exist. Even from recycled material where they can build from polystyrene, these polystyrene glasses, they can build panels that will build houses. But there seems to be a mind shift that we need to change very often, where there's openness that even if it's a temporary housing, that we can do that and can move forward. We are talking to the Department of Education, and more specifically University of Technology for bringing in qualifications that's useful for the industry. Swan University of Technology is currently putting through the systems a material science qualification that deals with farmers. And we hope that will be implemented in 2017 so that young people can learn again. We need to make the industry sexy again for attract youngsters. And that is part of that, where we deal directly with them in shaping and formulating that. Honorable Bengu, I think that's my last question. Ownership, like I mentioned before, is something that we need to think about. We need to do a lot more research around that and get the statistics. I believe probably 30-40% would be black-owned. I use the broader terminology of black-owned industry specifically invested in, but I don't have exact figures in front of me, so I can't respond to your question. Coming back to that, if we can make the industry grow again, there will be new entrants into the market. There's no barriers in entering the plastic industry. It's not that capital intensive to start up a small business, and many of these businesses started with one machine in a garage where they start producing products. So it's not a barrier to the entry. It's getting people interested to invest in the industry. Because currently, we see more and more imports coming in, and we don't, there's no excitement around creating new businesses. So we're committed to the project. We are, part of our plans, looking at putting programs together to start training more people at specifically for enterprise crisis. And we will come back with a proper proposal around assistance and support around that. I hope I've covered all the questions. I'm sorry I'm long-winded, but I thought it was very good.
Yes, you have. I would like to
maybe just a last point. I'm happy if the committee, portfolio committee, would like to visit your factory. I'm happy in the new year to maybe set a day aside and take you to a few places that you can see what you do.
Electricity generation and also addition. And the agriculture based on the cost of electricity is related to electricity. And the role of the municipality, and we look at the cost generated and having the price. And then we have municipalities put them on top. And the person that we are asking is ASC Economic Transformation we have started in the positive and the negative impact of electricity in our house. Particularly to by the municipality. To assess whether we will gain more, municipalities will gain more by reducing tariffs for investors, so it will attract investors and create more jobs. But in the process of creating jobs, you also target household within the municipality where there is one. So it will raise the poverty as a household level. And when you break that as a household level, you are then making and how about those households that have been on the immigration to become self-sufficient and afford paying for food that are from their expanding now. The analysis that one would want to make, if you have to make a decision of whether the markup on electricity is the best route for municipalities to generate income or reduce tariffs to attract investors so that we can get more of the local citizens and money and become the best partition, affording to pay for services, resulting with the government of the base of the municipality, and the municipality that is financially viable, and the municipality that is in the long run, able to provide service in the long run, meaning that you have a municipality that resembles a developed country, and you have the community that resembles so both the municipality and the community are resembling pillars of the development policy, as well as your private sector. But the starting point is to take care of the private sector by reducing tariffs and enable the private sector to invest in areas where it was not going to invest. The tariffs grow, but in doing so, you then create more jobs for families that would not have had jobs. And when you do that, you are then creating the incentive of people that are sitting on the social ground, which is in general, which is the one that was presented last year in the portfolio committee, to say this department has to be clear as to who are the targets for SNMP development and job creation and cooperation. Are we talking the cooperative that is owned by Muslim who also has a salary somewhere? And that then does not have any impact on poverty reduction. It also does not have any impact in voting the revenue base of the municipality because those people in any way pay for a rate. But if we were targeting a household that is sitting on the social ground in the city generator, then we are making it a difference. In 5 years' time, we can begin to see the number of people that are exiting from those two departments. And in 5 years' time, we can then begin to see the number of those households who are beginning to pay for the departments in the past they were not able to pay for. And then we can begin to see how in 10 years a municipality's revenue base will be broadened, thereby making a municipality a financially viable municipality that is able to provide services to its citizens. So we have a heavy private sector, we have a heavy community before the adult, and we have a heavy municipality. Because the citizens who are here are able to pay for the money. So that is what the model is. Now, that this committee has written that model is going to set everything document and every written to the taxes, both from the private sector and also we facilitate joint meetings with other portfolio committees. And this is going to become much, much clearer for us than before. But I must really commend you for your presentation and for your honor. All the things that you have said are very, very important. And there are issues that we need to get to further engage on, to find solutions so that we can have in this country a heavy private sector, heavy communities, and heavy government. Thank you. In those words, I then and the last issue that maybe will take about 5 minutes is that once we are going on the air and oversight, and the problem for the oversight is that we are following the rules of parliament.
presentation before about 5:30. Ama, and the last thing we have is we have a program that is in front of us that we would want to be the committee to the program in line with the continuation of the work that we have done. And we don't get we have anticipated our difficulty work into the so we can protect in our lunch and we are invited to the one inviting it from so remember